Technology is an integral part of our business and personal lives, affecting virtually everything we do and experience in some form or fashion.
Information security.
As CPAs, it's never been more important to be ahead of the technology curve.
Privacy management.
That's why the AI CPA established the Top Technology Initiatives list, highlighting emerging technologies that'll contribute to the accounting profession.
Assurance and compliance. Mobile and remote computing.
Hi, I'm Alexandra DeFelice with the Journal of Accountancy. I'm here with David Cieslak today. He's from Arxis Technology in Los Angeles. How are you doing, David?
Fantastic. Thank you for letting me be here.
Great. Great to have you. This is the eighth year that data security has been number one on the AICPA's Top Technology Initiatives list. It's obviously continuing to be a concern. But what's new in the area of IT security threats today that wasn't around a few years ago?
Well, you know, IT security is really just, I would call it a living organism, but it's really just something that keeps evolving as, you know, new systems come out, as new software becomes available. Just as, you know, IT moves forward, the security threats move forward as well. And, you know, there's constantly going to be a group of folks that are looking to compromise our systems, grab client data, potentially steal identity. It's an evolving process, and we need to make sure that as practitioners, as end users, that we're constantly mindful that this is not standing still, that we're doing whatever we need to do to make certain that we're always protecting ourselves from the evolving threat, you know, those things that are, you know, over time changing. So today, some of the things that are probably the most significant are things like just social engineering. And that's not necessarily a new concept, but it's the folks that are potentially looking to compromise their systems have gotten so good at, you know, really crafting emails or, you know, basically presenting something that's so enticing that we just can't not click. So we just are looking at it saying, I can't stop myself. I have to click on this. And when I do, I in fact potentially compromise the device. I end up giving away confidential information. Just in this last week alone, I've gotten notices on both Facebook and Twitter saying your account has been deactivated or that, you know, you need to log in and reaffirm your credentials. And so for many people, they're looking at that going, oh no, I need to make sure that there's no interruption in service. And of course there is no, you know, my account hasn't been deactivated and nothing has, nothing is out of order, but, you know, it's all about, you know, crafting that right message to the end user to get them to click. And so we end up giving so much away, and that is probably one of still the biggest threats today.
So that's very interesting. So it's become, on the evildoers part, it's become a lot more advanced than the hot, you know, notice from somebody from Guam asking for you to put a certain amount of money into their account.
Correct. They've gotten far more sophisticated. Their English has gotten better. I understand there's a lot of English students out of work right now, so they're happy to help pull together, and help craft a great email message. But honestly, no, it's gotten so darn good that it's almost impossible to tell the difference between legitimate and not. So another perfect example, I got a notice recently, somebody said, you know, so-and-so has sent you a Hallmark greeting, an electronic e-greeting. And I'm thinking, well, I don't normally get a Hallmark e-greeting from this person. So I was very suspicious, very skeptical, because I'd seen, you know, other emails show up saying, you know, someone's sending you an e-greeting. It just so happened this one was legitimate. So it just so happens it was a happy Memorial Day, you know, let's honor our troops kind of thing. But it tells you that the line has become so thin between, you know, what is, you know, what's legitimate and, you know, what is not. And it really just, it's almost incumbent upon us to, every time we exercise that mouse, every time we click the mouse, we want to make sure that we're really giving thought. Does this make sense? Is it too good to be true? Am I potentially giving away something? Does this even make sense? Should I not be doing this?
So err on the side of not trusting it and thinking that it's a potential threat.
Correct. Well, one of the things I do is I do a lot of talk on IT security, and one of the things I've always said over the years is we need to all be thinking about really kind of convenience second and security first. unfortunately, it's almost always the other way around. We all are excited about a new device, whether it's a phone or an iPad or a, you name the device. We're all so excited to get using it, and we're ready to just kind of put all sorts of valuable information on there with not without giving a lot of really what I consider to be the minimal amount of thought to security. So always want to think about security first and convenience or maybe the fun factor second.
So talking about the minimal, what are something, there's, you know, there's obviously a ton of things that could be done to protect yourself. Like starting off, what's the easiest, most affordable things that CPAs can do right now?
Well, I think about affordable. One of the things we want to do is make sure we're educating our users. So, you know, I look at it and say, you know, great opportunity to kind of make certain that all the end users are really kind of dialed into what's going on out there. What are the things we need to be concerned about? Do a lunch and learn. You know, buy pizza for the office and let's all get together and talk about the fact that if you get email that somehow or another makes it past our spam filter, please don't be clicking on this stuff. As I think about so many of the security compromises and so many of the incidents that we've, you know, been brought into to assist cleaning up over the years, so many times, you know, there's a person, as it were, internally that's kind of behind the trouble. Not because they were malicious, but just because they weren't maybe thinking the way they needed to. So absolutely, pull people together, low cost, no cost, it'll cost you a pizza, get people together at lunchtime, talk about it. But from there, as we think about the different systems, keep them up to date. One of the things that, you know, the black hats, they're called, are trying to do is really kind of take advantage or really kind of banking on the fact that, you know, the end users aren't doing, you know, what they need to be doing, keeping their system patched, up to date. You know, they have the latest browser, you know, version and the latest patches installed, antivirus that's installed and up to date, you know, be using a firewall. There's a whole list of really kind of fundamental or baseline, we call them baseline security measures that should be in place, but none of them are overly complex, none of them are overly expensive. So it's really just kind of stepping through that list, but, you know, think about the things that just would make good sense. Antivirus, patches, end user education. Start there, and I think you've gone a long way to fix almost, you know, probably some of the biggest threats that are out there today.
How often should they, you know, put it on their calendar or something to, you know, it's one thing to do it once, then it starts to get old. There's new versions. They don't stay on top of that. How can they stay on top of it? How, at a minimum, how often should they be staying on top of this?
Well, and that's a great question. One of the things I always tell folks is security is not a product. It's a process. So it really, it evolves over time. And so we want to make sure that we're, as you just, you know, as your question suggests, coming back and revisiting it, rethinking it. Are we still kind of in good working order? Are we properly and adequately protected? And I would tell you, once a quarter, no more than every 6 months, you know, bring folks together, get the IT person, if you don't have an in-house IT person, bring them back into the picture and saying, what has moved, what has changed, what do we potentially need to do, you know, are there specific steps we need to take that are, you know, really kind of will keep us, continue to keep us well protected, you know, going forward.
Moving outside of the office, there's been increasing concerns around sharing data with clients electronically. Mm-hmm. What are some secure alternatives out there, and how can using these tools address things like regulation issues surrounding electronic data exchange?
Well, and there's, it's a great question. I think there's a lot of, more and more we're looking to exchange information with our clients in virtual real time. And we want to make certain that if we're connecting to their systems or if they're, if we're exchanging documents with them, that we're doing that in a secure manner. And I think, again, it gets back to that whole convenience versus security. Years ago, I think many of us, too many of us, would just send information back and forth via email, not really thinking much about the fact that by design, email is not a secure medium. And so it's not a real good way to move data back and forth. It really is just kind of laying it out there and saying, I hope it doesn't get picked off. I hope it, you know, it doesn't get broken into. So, but there's some great options today for you know, client portals and some secure file transfer tools. A number of vendors have kind of stepped into that space. They offer that as a software as a service. So it's not really difficult to set up. It's not very costly. So I would say that as you look at any kind of document exchange or any kind of data exchange with a client, always be asking yourself the question, is it going to make it there securely? And if I can't answer that, you know, definitively, if I don't know that for sure, then get that answer first. And let's make sure that we set up a system that supports that kind of secure interchange back and forth, whether it's through direct connections of systems or by setting up some kind of secure portal where we both kind of can share that data.
I've heard a lot about client portals lately, and a lot of our readers have been contacting us about what portals are and how they can help. Explain a little bit about how they work and how that option is more secure than email.
Okay. Well, a client portal really is just kind of a secure place where we both agree we're going to exchange files. And so there's a secure connection between my computer in the portal to maybe place a file there, and a secure connection between the portal and the client's computer for them to pick that file up, and vice versa. So we can go back and forth. We both make a secure connection to this secure location to exchange these documents back and forth. Now, when we talk about a portal, I mean, and that's really kind of what a portal is. It can be further branded. You can attach it to your website. You can put your company logo there. All sorts of things you can do to kind of create a real nice end user experience around it, but really the most important or significant aspect to a portal is it's a secure place to kind of move those files back and forth. And again, the good news is there's some third-party, you know, SaaS offerings, software as a service offerings that are very affordable that will give you that today. And literally within a matter of minutes, you can get yourself up and going and ready to exchange files securely. But don't do it via email. That's just a bad way to go.
And the difference is that the client logs in with a password from that site versus having to just open an attachment in the email.
Correct. And in fact, if you look at a lot of the products that are out there, they'll say, well, we'll allow you to send a document, you know, attached to an email securely. Really what they're doing is kind of detaching that document from the email and putting that on that secure portal that we're talking about, and again, asking that customer to make that kind of secure connection, HTTPS, which means secure, which is an encrypted connection from their browser back into that portal in order to be able to grab that document.
So, touching upon passwords, I know in the past you've heard a lot about people, you know, talking about things that people can do now that are easy and cheap. Are people still making the mistakes of having, you know, 1234 as their password, or, you know, their first name? You know, what are people still doing that, or is there tips on how to make stronger passwords that you can actually remember?
Things that we suggest are creating something called passphrases. So really what you do is you take something that more resembles a, you know, a sentence of, you know, I enjoy New York. And instead of, you know, just spelling it all out, I enjoy New York, you might change everywhere that there's a letter O, you might make it a number 0. And everywhere there's a letter E, you might make it, you know, the number 3. So it looks kind of like a little geeky way to write the whole thing out. But really, if you think about it from a computer perspective, it's got all appearances of being a very random sequence of numbers and letters, upper and lower case, maybe an exclamation mark in there somewhere. So really, from a computer hacking perspective, it's brutal to try to break that down versus something as simple as 1234.
Very interesting. That's a great idea and easy to remember for people as well, with so many passwords that we have to remember nowadays. You mentioned SaaS a few times, also called cloud computing. Again, another thing that a lot of our readers are starting to ask about, CPAs are paying attention to. Not a new phrase, well, sort of new phrase, not a new concept of basically having things living on the web, but security issues around investing in cloud computing or SaaS offerings are still very present. What are some of the security issues that are, you know, what's really justified? What are the real security issues, and what precautions should companies take if they're going to be implementing a cloud-based or a SaaS solution?
Well, you specifically want to make certain that you dial into, you know, what are the things that they're doing to really, from a service, perspective, to make certain that they're, that they are going to be around, that their systems are secure, that, you know, what are the steps that they have taken? And you're right, you know, those, the vendors who are getting into this space are absolutely very sensitive to this, and that they should be very forthcoming in saying, here's all the things we've done. We've had a SAS 70 audit, or we've had penetration testing done by a third party. We'll make all those reports available to you. Here's, what we do from an encryption perspective. Our internal employees don't have access to your data. I mean, they should be able to give you, you know, a pretty comprehensive view of, you know, here's all the things we're doing to ensure that your data's, your client's data is fully protected. And if they're not forthcoming, and I mean very forthcoming, that alone should be, a very serious cause for pause.
So they should even essentially, the really forthcoming ones should have some kind of document on their website where you can read that before even having to contact them.
Yeah, if not on their website, at least that's something they need to be able to share with you. You want to talk to other users. You want to be able to see that stuff. I mean, you want to really, if they tell you, you know, we've got copies of these reports available, ask for them. You want to be able to take a look at that stuff, because that is, that's real telling. Because if you've got third parties who are regularly looking to, you know, do that penetration testing, looking to break in, looking to test the kind of the security framework that the vendor has in place and saying, is it sound, is it solid? You want to make sure that you're taking a look at that and make sure that that's in fact really the case.
Great. You mentioned social networking, you know, the email that you got that was inaccurate. There's been some hesitancy by some CPA firms to engage in things like Facebook, to let people use that within their during working hours. Does it really open the door to security threats, or are people over-exaggerating the potential threat there?
I think that social networking is one of those things where I think it's two things we really need to be concerned about. One is what's the right, what are the social networking sites it even makes sense to be involved with? Does it make sense to be on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and MySpace and High Five and the list goes on? So it's really identifying which ones really have a legitimate business purpose. And then from there, to the extent that we say, yes, it's okay to be connected to those and really kind of using those as kind of springboards to distinguish, some of the expertise of the firm and to really, show thought leadership for the firm, because I think that's a great, that's a great use of social media, quite honestly. But once you've identified what are those, social media, those social networking sites that you're going to do that through, what does security around that look like? So do you just say, no, we don't do this and we don't allow that? I think that's a little heavy-handed. I think it's okay to say yes once you've kind of gotten, that first question answered. But then from there, to the extent that you allow those things, what are the risks of those? I think the risks of some of the things we've already talked about, and honestly, it's as much as anything, it's what you click on, when you get to that website, there's interaction with other people via those social networking websites. What is their security situation? Has their site or their account been compromised and somebody is now turning around and using that as a, kind of a spam broadcast opportunity to say, here, click on this and really just getting back to that whole social engineering thing, enticing somebody to click on something, and really it's as much a threat in email as it is in social networking. So I really kind of look at those and saying it's all about enticing the end user. It's pretty much a similar concern.
And so to educate your staff to say, don't just open your door to strangers, don't just click on anything. It's the same thing as saying, come on into my firm and steal my...
Correct. You don't just necessarily leave the door wide open when you walk out. So yeah, it's clearly something that between social engineering, via spam, also a lot more websites today are have compromised content on them. Mm-hmm. So if you think about you go to do a Google search, you go to do a search on Bing or Yahoo, and you get search results. Doesn't mean that Yahoo, Bing, or Google has necessarily vetted all of those search results to make sure there's nothing bad there. And in fact, that could take you to a website that has compromised links on it. So all of a sudden, legitimately, you are navigating around, doing your day job, clicking on things that were all business related, and yet somehow or another found that you were presented with an opportunity to click on something that was infected or is going to, you know, potentially create compromise on your machine. And that's why I say, you know, probably the weakest link in any security framework is the person with a mouse.
Okay, so beyond the mouse, talking about, you know, getting into all this, these hot new devices, people are looking at iPads and iPhones and taking their work out of their office way beyond just the laptop. And of course, one of the biggest security concerns that that we've heard about is, you know, people leave their laptop somewhere, someone picks it up, and all of a sudden their client's data is compromised.
Correct.
So what do people have to be looking out for with all these mobile devices out there differently than they would have when everything was in their office?
That's a great question. I think one of the things that, you know, as you look at putting confidential data on any device, period, any device, it's really saying, how can I make that data otherwise unreadable if I lose, you know, basically the, you know, that device physically? So if I lose my phone, I lose my netbook, I lose my iPad, I lose whatever device, you know, potentially has confidential information on it, how can I make that device or the data on that device useless, unreadable, if it should fall into the wrong hands, it gets stolen, you know, physically, you know, taken away from me? And so there's encryption solutions for virtually everything out there. So as you look at any device, think about encrypting the data that goes on that device, no matter what the device is. And if you can't, then don't put confidential information on that device. It really kind of comes down to something that simple.
And there's increasingly, it seems like a lot of devices have the ability that if it is lost, you can wipe out like everything that's on that device from your office.
Yeah, a kill switch, as it were. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so more and more products are basically giving you the ability to say, I can do that remote wipe where, you know, I just enter a code and it'll basically reset that device. Product like LoJack, perfect example. I mean, we all kind of are familiar with that term from automobile days. You know, it'll find your stolen automobile. They've got a product like that for basically for a laptop or, you know, for computers. And so it's burned actually into the, you know, to the BIOS itself. It's not done as just a program that runs off your hard drive. So as soon as somebody fires up that machine, even if they pulled out your hard drive, put a replacement one in, you know, you're still going to be able to find that device and potentially do a remote wipe of that device via this product. So there's some neat stuff out there. There's neat solutions. But be always thinking about, you know, how can I make that unreadable?
Great. So just kind of wrapping things up, is there anything else that we haven't touched upon, advice that you want to give to CPAs out there to just make sure that they're doing that due diligence, that they're being as secure as they can with the resources that they have available?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, honestly, as I shared already, you know, think about security first and, you know, convenience second. CPAs, and I'm one myself, are, you know, to me, just, you know, for the most part, are always very sensitive, and I'll go so far as to say pretty nervous about potentially, you know, exposing client data. So they're already pretty tuned in to making certain that what they're doing, whatever they need to do to be secure. And none of this is meant to really scare anyone away from actually using some of the new technology and putting things in the cloud and really enjoying some of the really kind of the opportunities, the really great opportunities to kind of work with some of these new devices, these new paradigms, and really kind of just some very beneficial ways. But if we're really thinking about security first and we're thinking about things like encryption and doing patching and social engineering, some of the very things we've touched on, I really think you're going to be doing what you need to do to really, you know, protect yourself.
Great. I appreciate all your time today. Thanks a lot. And hopefully we'll take some of the CPAs out there, we'll take some of your advice back to the office and stay on top of things.
Thank you, Alexandra.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Top Technology Initiatives podcast. And if you're looking for more information on the top technology initiatives, go to www.aicpa.org/toptech. That's aicpa.org/TOPTECH. Or if you have any questions for us, email us at toptech@aicpa.org. This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered.
and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA makes no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assumes no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaims all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.